Well, good news is our pilot episode got posted just fine, recorded just fine. The bad news, that sound quality. Woof. I promise you, we'll work on that. Thank you for coming back. We're still ironing some things out over here. I've got some new adapters here, a couple of new accessories. Already have a new headset because I much prefer the over-the-ear headphones as opposed to the earbuds. I've never gotten comfortable with those things. Still need a new mic. This one's fine. I mean, I guess I shouldn't totally poo-poo the sound quality of that first episode. It's okay, but a little bit of reverb that I'd like to work out. A little bit of distortion when my cadence gets to a certain point or I get a little worked up and start talking a little louder into this microphone that's all of an inch away from my face. So at some point, I'm going to look for an upgrade there. Sadly, this economy has hit me as hard as I'm sure it's probably hit you. So again, thank you for your patience. We're going to be chipping away at things as we go here, but we've got some fun stuff planned. I think you're going to get a kick out of it, and I sincerely appreciate you coming back here for episode 2 of Spin Sold Separately. Again, I am JD, the host, and I sincerely appreciate your time. You're going to hear me say thank you a lot because I am by nature a very grateful human being. I am very thankful for all the blessings I have received in my life. I'm grateful for the challenges. I'm grateful for what achievements I've been able to assemble over the years. And right now, I am sincerely grateful to anyone that takes the time out of their day to lend an ear to someone who is brand new in this industry. I am going to try to be as down the middle fair as I can. Like I said, I called this Spin Sold Separately for a reason. Not sure if we're going to stick with that name. I like it. Kicked around a lot of different ideas. It does convey the message that you are not going to get spin from me. You'll get my opinion, but you'll know when it's opinion. If you get a news story from me, palms to the sky, it is going to be the truth. Even if I might not be happy with it. Like we talked about last time, the truth is the truth. And as a wise man once said, the truth cannot be controversial. So I am grateful for each and every minute that you are with me on this journey. And I'm going to do my dangest not to let you down. I value your time. I'm not here to waste it. So thank you again. A few things that I meant to mention in the first episode. I'm trying to do this extemporaneously with as few notes as possible. I want this to be from the heart. I want this to be basically the verbal version of what's going on in my head at any given moment. I mentioned voting in 7 elections, 3 for one side, 4 for the other. I'm going to be very upfront with you here, and you've probably figured this out by now. I'm voting for Donald Trump, okay? I'm leaning right in the current political environment. I want that known up front, not trying to hide anything from you. I am not a Republican. I have never been a Democrat. I am and have always been a very proud, hard-carrying independent. I vote my beliefs. I vote what's in my heart. I vote based on what is important to me. And when it comes to a presidential election, sadly, we usually only have 2 realistic choices. And it comes down to a matter of picking which candidate and which party at that given time is more aligned with my beliefs. It's never 100% on one side and 0% on the other. My politics, my ideals, really haven't changed over the years, though I've voted for different parties. What's changed is the landscape. The political spectrum has shifted underneath my feet to a point where, when I was in my 20s and 30s, my ideals and my vision for the country aligned better with the left. I hope this isn't news to anybody at this point, but that landscape has shifted dramatically over the last 10 to 20 years. While I haven't moved, that political spectrum has, and now I look around and I find myself more aligned with the right. That doesn't bother me. It's not like I'm too proud to vote for one side or the other. I vote what's in my heart. God willing, I hope that's what you do too. And I hope as this, if I'm fortunate enough for this project of mine here to grow, if you take nothing else away from this program, I hope if nothing else, you start voting with your heart instead of voting for party. I was very encouraged when I looked this up. The most recent Gallup poll from dated October 12th showed 31% of respondents as registered Republicans, 28% as registered Democrats, leaving 41% of people in this poll not aligning themselves with either party. To me, that's a very good thing. Now, if you believe those numbers, one would think that a nonpartisan appealing to both sides independent would have a pretty darn good chance of winning elections. And sadly, we don't see a whole lot of that in our political climate. Very, very few independents out there. And a lot of that has to do with the outsized clout and seemingly bottomless pit of dollars that these political parties can throw at political races to basically squash out any independent that just goes and throws their name in the ring because they want to try to do the right thing and break up this two-party system that is, I think, holding us back. But that's a discussion for another day. To see 41% of people refusing to identify with either party, that's a good thing. I'm glad that that number is bigger than either party affiliation. And it was not surprising to me to see the actual party affiliation the way it was, you know, very, very close, within 3% of each other. We need to grow that independent number. But like I said, I have voted Democrat in the past. My favorite president of my lifetime, I was very, very young when Ronald Reagan was president, so I have very little recollection of him. My favorite president of my lifetime to this day is Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton worked with the first Republican Congress in decades. I'll get the exact number for you, but he worked with a Republican Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich, to balance a budget. I know, right? Balanced budget? What in the world is that? Boy, are we going to get into that in a future episode, or several, too. That used to be on every Republican campaign mailer. Balanced budget. Responsible spending. Well, neither party seems to be very interested in that right now, but again, we'll deal with that in the future. I don't want to sound preachy here. I might have come off a little bit that way in that first episode. I'm not trying to do that here. I'm not trying to talk down to anyone who doesn't agree with me. This is how I talk, and I talk passionately. I have a reason for believing what I do. But right now, the left is supporting a lot of things that I am vehemently opposed to. And we will get into those as well. So that's why it might sound like I'm talking more to the left than I am the right here. We all know these legacy news networks lean hard left, and it seems to be harder left by the day. You'll notice I left out one network when I was ticking off all the legacy networks that I'm so angry at in that first episode. I left Fox out of there. Maybe I should have, maybe I shouldn't have. I know the opinions of Fox News vary wildly depending on your politics. What I will say, having spent a fair amount of time, especially recently, you know, making sure I'm prepared to talk about these issues in a very educated kind of way, at least knowledge of what's going on, a feel for what NBC is saying about something as opposed to Fox and vice versa. It's obvious. Yes, Fox leans right. No doubt about it. I don't think Fox leans nearly as far right as, say, CNN does left. MSNBC, it's not even worth my discussion. If you watch MSNBC, I'm sorry. I'm going to try to be nice here. I don't want to swear. I don't want to isolate anybody. MSNBC is a joke. Okay? From top to bottom. I think CNN has its moments. I think they are making an effort to try to get back to some semblance of fairness. They're not there yet. If you watched the vice presidential debate between Tim Walz and J.D. Vance, you cannot come out of that with any opinion other than CBS is clearly in the tank for the left. I'm sorry. It's right there in front of you. I wish it wasn't so. I really wish it wasn't. ABC News embarrassed themselves in the Trump-Paris debate. The fact checks were ridiculously one-sided. Some of them that were brought up in the moment, they only fact-checked one side, and a couple of the fact checks were even incorrect. Now, the actual substance of these debates we're going to get into as we go here if we have time before the election. I'm trying to get as many of these in as I can before Election Day, but boy, are we getting down to it. Down to about 10 days here. Oh, it's coming fast. Make sure you are up on the news. That's all I ask. Go to the polls with real, accurate, unbiased information supporting your vote. I'm not here as a political pundit. I am not paid as a political pundit. I am not a journalist. I am not a reporter. I have no degree in political science. I am not a party operative. I am not affiliated with any one party. But what I am is a student of what I observe, and I can tell when something is off. And that's what I have felt about the legacy media for a very long time. You support who you want. Support who you want and what you want. I don't judge. We all have different reasons for believing what we believe. And I think the more that people with differing opinions can get together and talk about them in a calm, respectful, give and take kind of way, I think we could eliminate a lot of the vitriol that is infesting our political public square. But all I ask, you support who you want, what you want, for your reasons. All I ask is that you make sure that your support has a factual foundation. Do not allow yourself to be manipulated. No political party deserves your blind loyalty. No politician deserves your blind loyalty. Make them earn your vote every single time. We have way too many lifetime politicians living, breathing advertisements for term limits. None of them deserve your loyalty. Make them earn your vote every single time. Don't let them be comfortable. Don't let them walk around without fear of losing an election or being primaried because they've lost touch with their constituents. Anyway, okay, so enough on that. Now, for the event that led me here, like I said, media malpractice has been bothering me for a very, very long time. The covering that our media, I'm sorry, I gotta be specific here, legacy media has done for President Biden for the last 3.5 years, it really is unbelievable. All the while attacking Donald Trump, I want fairness. I don't want favor in any direction. I don't want bias in any direction. We talked about this before. I want the story. If Donald Trump said something stupid, tell me that Donald Trump said something stupid. I will make up my mind on how to feel about it. If Joe Biden spends an inordinate amount of time at the beach while half the world is on fire, I want to hear that too. I don't need to be told. We don't need to be told how to feel about that. But it needs to be reported. There is such a wild discrepancy in positive versus negative coverage of these two parties. A New York Sun article dated August 20th, 2024, by Joseph Curl, cites a Media Research Center analysis report that showed for the time period leading up to August 20th, the 2 weeks leading up to it, the legacy media coverage of Kamala Harris was 84% positive. The coverage on Donald Trump on the same networks, CBS, NBC, and ABC, 89% negative. 84% positive for Harris, 89% negative for Trump. These are news programs. These are not opinion shows. These are news programs. The 3 days following the first assassination attempt on President Trump, remember that? Yeah, that happened. The first 3 days after that first assassination attempt on Trump, the whole, we all need to dial back the rhetoric period, 95% negative coverage on those same three networks the 3 days following President Trump taking a bullet to his ear. Yes, it did really happen, Keith Olbermann. Repeating all these long debunked falsehoods. Now look, there's no shortage of fodder out there. If you want to go after President Trump for anything, there's a lot of fair game out there. But for some reason, the media and a lot of these high-level Democrats keep going after the same long-since debunked falsehoods. The Charlottesville lie. The bloodbath quote. The dictator on day one nonsense. All of these cut out of much larger comments by the former president, and all of them purposefully taken out of context to twist the meaning into something that it was never intended to be. And if you actually listen to the entire quote, it is perfectly clear that what President Trump was saying was not exactly the way the media spun it to you. They talk about him being a perceived threat to democracy, endlessly. Threat to democracy, end of democracy. Half the people that are complaining about how big of a threat to democracy he is probably couldn't even define it without looking it up first. Trivia question. Are we a democracy? Is the United States of America a democracy? Quick. I'm not going to give you the answer. Don't look it up. President Trump was president once already. Now, we're going to get into my feelings on both of these candidates in future episodes. I don't want to get too sidetracked here, but that'll set the stage for some future episodes there. But Joe Biden's exit from this race was another turning point for me as far as we need more voices in this independent media square. I might be the only one hearing this, but hey, at least I'm putting it out there. Joe Biden insisted on running. Everybody knew his age. We all saw what was going on. He had aged noticeably. Obviously, he was in his late 70s between his time as President Obama's vice president and him running in 2020. He wins in 2020. Yes, he did win. The election was not on the up and up. It was not stolen. There was a lot of stuff that went on in that election that was not good for the country. Again, we'll get into all this in the future, but long story short, Biden wins in 2020. His obvious physical and cognitive decline in the years since, it's right out there for everyone to see. And this is not meant as any kind of insult. This is not meant to demean him. He is my president as much as he is yours. No, I did not vote for him. No, I would not have voted for him this time. But he is my president. And it gives me no pleasure to sit here and talk about the president of the United States' obvious cognitive decline. But it's there, and it's been there for anyone to see. Yet still, in spite of all that, the Democrat Party all but blocked any opposition to him leading into the 2024 campaign season. They made it very uncomfortable for anyone to oppose him. They didn't make it impossible. A couple of people got through. Congressman Dean Phillips for one. Marianne Williamson another. But they blocked opposition to the point that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. left the party and ran as an independent. He didn't want to leave the party, at least at the time. All he asked was, let me run. I think we need another voice in the Democrat primary. Let's have an open primary. Let's let the voters decide. Democrats didn't want that. Democrat Party didn't want that. So they made any opposition to Joe Biden very, very difficult, to the point that really only two serious contenders got in. Like I said, RFKJ left the party to run as an independent. Boy, did that have some unintended consequences nobody saw coming. We'll get into that too. But then came the disastrous debate on June 28th that anybody could have seen coming from 100 miles away. You didn't even have to hear President Biden speak. Even the way he walked onto the stage that night, you could tell there was no way on earth he could handle another term as president. No way. And his performance at that debate was embarrassing. It was scary. It was uncomfortable sitting on my couch watching as the leader of the free world struggled to put sentences together. And I'm not saying this in a mean way. I'm really not. But that was the reality. And to absolutely nobody's surprise, he plummeted in the polls after that. At the time, it was already looking like Trump was probably running a little bit ahead. After that debate, I mean, dependently, reliably, blue states like Minnesota and New Mexico were starting to look wobbly for the Democrats. Then came the coup. Oh, that's such a strong word. It wasn't a coup. Well, let me throw out some definitions of the word coup for you. You decide. I have three different definitions here. Now, it was not a violent coup. It is true that most coups in world history have been violent in nature or somehow involved the military, but they don't have to. I got three definitions of coup here. One, a sudden seizure of power from a government. Okay, that's pretty close. Two, a sudden decisive exercise of force in politics. I think that one pretty well applies, don't you? For weeks after that debate, Joe Biden said, "I'm not going anywhere.
I'm not going anywhere. I beat Trump once, I'll do it again."
He didn't want to leave. He made it very clear he didn't want to leave. Definition of coup number three. You ready for this? An overt attempt by government elites to unseat incumbent leadership. I think we have a winner. It was a coup, folks. A peaceful one, but that's what it was. In the weeks after that disastrous debate, it was clear to anyone paying attention with an objective eye, the party wanted him out. And all of a sudden, after 3.5 years, you started to get little leaks. You started to, all of a sudden, from these legacy news networks that found it very hard to criticize Joe Biden for 3.5 years, all of a sudden came out of the woodwork with all kinds of stories about cognitive decline, his limited schedule, his physical frailty. And all of a sudden, less than a month after that debate, on Sunday, July 21st, Joe Biden releases a statement via X. It's an odd way for a sitting president to announce to the world that he's no longer running. But it came out in a release. I think it was on X. I'll double check that, verify it. Again, I don't want to tell you anything that isn't true. I'm doing this off of, doing some of this off memory. So I apologize if it was, might have been a Facebook or Instagram. It ended up on X. That's the one I'm on. 2 days later, 2 days later, Kamala Harris is elevated to the position of Democrat nominee for president. 2 days. No open primary, no campaigning, no interviews, no primary debates, no contested convention. They could have done that. It's happened 3 times in American political history. The Republicans in 1964, I'm sorry, it happened 4 times. The Republicans in 1964 and the Democrats in 1860, 1924, and 1968. Perfectly viable option under the circumstances. If they wanted to oust Joe Biden, if they did not feel like Biden could win this election any longer, even though they bypassed their own entire primary process, not letting anybody challenge him with any real chance of winning, 2 days, they elevate Kamala Harris to the nomination. 0 votes cast. Now, in the primaries, when this should have taken place, Joe Biden received 14 million primary votes. 87% of the vote, 3,896 delegates. Dean Phillips received four delegates, 529,000 votes. There were about 700,000 uncommitted votes in the Democrat primaries. Marianne Williamson won about 470,000. And just a category of others, write-ins and whatnot, 430,000. Joe Biden won 87% of the primary vote on the Democrat side. Kamala Harris received 0. She's earned as many Democrat primary delegates as I have. It baffles me that this was not a bigger issue. Why didn't Democrat voters revolt? How could they possibly be okay with this? Their voice was taken away from them. And here's what scares me. The Democrat Party knows there is no way Kamala Harris was going to win an open primary. You know how we know that? because she ran in 2019 for the 2020 nomination and dropped out before the first primary election was held, before the Iowa caucus. She received no delegates. She was that unpopular in her own party in the most recent Democrat presidential primary. We're not talking about ancient history here. This is the last primary election the Democrats held. She received zero delegates. Now, I'm not sure who would have won had they held the open primary that Democrat voters deserved, that the country deserved, whether it would have been Gavin Newsom, Gretchen Whitmer, Josh Shapiro, Hakeem Jeffries. I don't know who would have won. But 2 days after Joe Biden withdrew from the race, after he was steadfastly assuring the American people he was fine, he was going to run, he's out on Sunday. Kamala Harris is in on Tuesday. The ensuing media coverage was embarrassing. An absolute clown show of sycophancy by our legacy media. All of a sudden, they do a complete 180 on Kamala Harris, who was a very unpopular vice president, even in the eyes of said legacy media. She had 38% favorability in June. 38. By October, that favorable rating was up to 47. Based on what? Based on absolutely nothing more than the media coverage of her. The celebratory nature of it. The joy. The brat. The vibes. This was going to be a vibes election. I'm sorry. Can vibes pay my electric bill for me? Because if they can't, I don't care. And voters that care about this country and have any interest in its long-term survival, they don't care about brat or joy or vibes either. They care about results. And the last 3.5 years, I'm sorry, not great results. Which leads me to the event. The moment in time where I said, oh, yep, it's time to order that stuff that's been in my cart for 6 weeks. This microphone I'm talking into right now. So Kamala receives the nomination. Chuck Schumer, who is among the most dangerous politicians in this country for a number of reasons. We will get into a lot more about Chuck Schumer in the near future here. He goes out after Kamala is elevated to this position to which she was not remotely qualified for, if you ask me. And by qualified, I mean elected by the people. The people had no say. And I'm talking to Democrats. I'm going to bat for you here. You should be angry that it happened this way. But anyway, here's the quote from Chuck Schumer while talking about the elevation of Kamala Harris, because it was out there, even in those 2 days. It was already out there that people were a little uncomfortable with, geez, we just unseated. We basically just forced out the sitting president who kind of wanted to run again, and we're already going to rush and nominate someone else? This doesn't feel very organic. Chuck Schumer had the nerve to go out there and say on Tuesday, this is 2 days removed from the posting from Joe Biden announcing his withdrawal from the race. Quote, when I spoke with her on Sunday, she said she wanted the opportunity to win the nomination on her own and to do so from the grassroots up, not top down. Now that the process has played out from the grassroots bottom up, we are here today to throw our support behind Vice President Kamala Harris. End quote. They think you're stupid, folks. Whether you're on the left, the right, members of the media, these people think you are stupid. They think they can get away with it. Are you kidding me? 2 days and the Senate minority leader goes on TV and expects us to believe that this was a grassroots bottom-up effort that took place in all of 48 hours? Primary seasons go on for months. Months. Over a year in most cases, especially for the party that isn't currently sitting in the White House. There are primary debates and endless nights of travel and town halls and talking to voters and debating other candidates, earning the vote of your own party, figuring out what your party platform is going to be, And here he is, 2 days later. The Senate Majority Leader, 2 days later, wants you to think that this was a grassroots effort. The will of the people, the will of the Democrats, Democrat voting base, the people who would vote in those primaries, was completely taken away. And they either don't think you're smart enough or brave enough to challenge them, even when they know they're lying. He knew this wasn't grassroots. So do you. There's not a person alive that thinks that was a grassroots effort. They went with it anyway, and they got away with it. And they'll get away with it again if we let them. I'd be irate. If I were a Democrat voter, I'd be irate. I supported Ron DeSantis in the primary. Now, I'm not a registered Republican, so I couldn't vote for him. But if I'd had the chance, all things considered, I wanted Ron DeSantis as the Republican nominee. I have my opinions on Trump, and we will get into those. I think I'm going to reserve that episode 3 for my opinion on Trump, and then we'll do an episode on Harris and the specifics. I want to be fair. But let's just say, for example, even though I supported DeSantis, let's just say the Republican Party woke up in mid-May after all of the primaries had taken place. They'd all campaigned, they'd all debated, except for Trump. I didn't like that, but the primaries played out. The voters had their say. They voted for Trump. Now, let's say the party decided, and after all the primaries were concluded, you know what? We don't think Trump can win. So you know what we're going to do? We're going to swap in Ron DeSantis. Even though Trump won the primaries, won the number of delegates, is the rightful winner of the nomination, we don't like it. We think our own voters are wrong. So we're going to put in Ron DeSantis. I would have been the first person in line at the doors of the RNC to say, hell no. This is not how we do things. Even though DeSantis was my choice, and even though I think he'd be up 10 points right now, that is not how we do things. That is not democracy. This was done because the Democrats decided Biden couldn't win. This wasn't because of his cognitive decline, or because of his age, and because if it were, they should have exercised the 25th Amendment by now. If they're that concerned about his age and his cognitive condition, how the hell is he still the sitting president? They could have 25th Amendmented him by, they could have done it any time. And you know who has to initiate and conclude that process? Kamala Harris. The vice president has to be involved. They didn't do that. If they were that concerned about his condition, why didn't they do that? They did this because they didn't think he could win. Even after the Democrat voters had followed their rules, the Democrats made it hard for anybody to challenge him. No serious contenders emerged. You know, God bless Dean Phillips, he tried. Marianne Williamson, they tried. But they weren't serious contenders, and the Democrats knew it. That's why they let him in. RFK, he might have been a little more serious of a contender. They didn't let him in. They all but forced him out of the party, and he has since left the party. They did it this way because they didn't think he could win. They subverted the will of their own primary voters. Folks, this is how oligarchies work. You know what an oligarchy is? It's another word that gets thrown around a lot that not everyone knows the definition to. Straight from the dictionary, definition of oligarchy. A small group of people having control of a country, organization, or institution. I think that perfectly describes the leadership of the Democrat Party right now. A very small group of people that have all the power. And they were powerful enough to force out a sitting president. I don't know how they ultimately did it. I have my theories. It's all conjecture. Maybe they threatened him with the 25th Amendment. Who knows? Something that they did in those weeks after that debate forced Joe Biden out of this race. He didn't want to leave it. He left it because he was forced out. That is my opinion. Now, who's the real threat to democracy here? Does any of that sound very democratic? For the party that'll go on any network that'll take them and shout into the moon about Donald Trump and his threat to democracy. I don't know. None of that sounded very democratic to me. So who is the real threat? You got a political coup. You've got all this lawfare against Donald Trump. You've got a litany of former Trump associates in prison, largely for very similar violations to, say, Hunter Biden's or Hillary Clinton's. You got Steve Bannon right now in prison for defying a congressional subpoena. You know who else did that? You know who else defied a congressional subpoena? Hunter Biden. Is he in prison right now? Roger Stone was in prison for lying under oath regarding the Russiagate investigation, which was a complete made-up bunch of nonsense that cost our government billions of dollars and untold amounts of man-hours. No, but Trump said lock her up. Donald Trump won the election in 2016, and as early as November 22nd, this is weeks after his election and long before his inauguration, before he even took office, that he opposed prosecution of Hillary Clinton. Okay? So spare me the lock her up. He has already faced four trials, and again, we're going to get into very specific stuff on Trump here. But this is the party of democracy, imprisoning political opponents. Open talk of completely destroying our system of government. The Supreme Court, the filibuster, the Electoral College, the very fundamental principles of our system, our protections, our separation of powers, they want to go after it all, and they're open about it. Kamala Harris just said the other night in her town hall, she's open to packing the court, which would only delegitimize it 100%. It would cease to be an institution of any legitimacy. And all this stuff is said with such arrogance, such blatant disregard for the truth, for the will of the voters, for the democratic process. That was the moment. That speech by Chuck Schumer, one of the most powerful people in Washington, the Senate Majority Leader, who I would argue is as powerful a single position as there is in Washington, next to the president, and in some cases even more so. That was the minute I decided I have to become part of this conversation. These people think they're invincible. And they get more haughty with every single re-election. No fear of ever losing. Some of these people have been there. Listen to some of these. Senator Grassley, 47 years in Congress. Senator Markey, 45 years. Representative Rogers of Kentucky, 41 years. Representative Smith of New Jersey, 41 years. Representative Hoyer of Maryland, 40 years. And just for honorable mention, Nancy Pelosi from California, who's been the speaker twice, 37 years. She's 83 years old. She's running again, and she will win overwhelmingly. And she knows it. She could live to be 100. She knows she's never getting voted out, ever. And I don't mean to just pick on her, but if these numbers don't scream for term limits, we need politicians in Washington that are willing to tackle issues, not just run for office in perpetuity. All of these people, they're never going to get voted out. Chuck Schumer? You think he's ever going to lose an election? There's no chance. No fear of the media ever calling them out. I mean, quite to the contrary. They know they're going to be protected. Unacceptable. It's unacceptable, and it has to change. So there is my story, and I'm sticking to it. That was the moment I decided to throw my hat into this ring, and I am so grateful to be here. I'm so grateful for all of you. I am wildly over 30 minutes in this episode, but this was important. I wanted to make it very clear, A, how nonpartisan I am, how I vote my heart. I don't vote because somebody has a D by their name or because somebody has an R by their name. And I encourage you to do the same. Make these people be better. If every politician had a healthy amount of fear that they might not win, we might get a little more out of them. They might not talk to us like we're five. Remember, they all work for us. We have the power. They only have the power that we grant them. Every other shred of power lies with the people. Make these people be better. Do not vote for them just because your family has always voted Republican for as long as you can remember. Just because your grandfather voted Democrat and told you to vote Democrat or else, doesn't mean you have to do it in 2024. The landscape has changed. So coming up in the next episode, I'm going to do a thorough and complete analysis of my thoughts on Trump, how they loved him and now they hate him. Why? Well, because he had the audacity to run against Hillary as a Republican and he won. You'll notice the treatment of him wasn't really all that bad until he had the nerve to win. We'll get into all the chaos of his first term, a lot of it self-inflicted, some of it not, the bogus impeachments, the Russiagate scandal, which was complete nonsense, COVID, how he handled it, all of it. We'll get into January 6th, what it was, what it was not, my thoughts on all of it. I'll talk about a little bit about the GOP platform here in 2024, this whole Project 2025 hoax, which Trump himself has basically told to pound sand repeatedly. You wouldn't know that if you're listening to Kamala's campaign ads. Border policy, taxes, energy, foreign policy, we'll get into all of it. And then I will follow that up with an episode on the Democrat platform. What we know of it, anyway. Not very much coming out policy-wise from the Democrats, and I'm not okay with that. That's a problem. But we will get into that. So, again, thank you so much for your time. We're going to wrap here. It's been a great show. I hope you enjoyed it. You've been listening to Spin Sold Separately. I am JD. Don't be a jerk. Bullies are the scum of the earth. And I'll talk to you next time.